Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hi there, I'm Rebecca Lowe. Welcome along to the latest edition of the Premier League on NBC podcast, where you can get the latest can't-miss content from NBC's coverage of one of the best leagues in the world. Be sure to tune in on weekends at 7 a.m. Eastern for Premier League mornings on NBCSN and Peacock Premium. But for now, we hope you enjoy the latest edition of the Premier League on NBC podcast. Now, at halftime, Robbie Musto, you said you wanted to see United manage the game. They failed.
Again, like drama. Every game's been drama. They've had two wins, Leeds and Newcastle, where it's been comfortable. Every other game has been some kind of drama with it. Things were going okay, by the way. I know that Martial maybe had a little injury. Things were going okay. Ronaldo comes on, Sancho comes on, Pogba comes on a little later on. And it all seems, you know, it just wasn't put together. And the biggest problem they've got, they look super vulnerable from in transition and counter-attacking. We saw it again from the set piece that time. We've seen it in other games as well. They could have lost the game, Rebecca. And really, they should have been in control and put the game to bed. I guess that was a plan with bringing on the attacking players.
They're having a wobble, Rob.
They are. And the problem they've got, Rebecca, is there's no fear of playing Manchester United. Look at Villa, look at Everton today. Man United are more on par with them than, I'll say, the teams at the top of the table. The more you give United the ball, the less threatening they are. You look at City, you look at Chelsea, you look at Liverpool. If they have the ball, they're going to hurt you. Manchester United almost score their goals when they're not particularly playing that well, when somebody can come up with a moment. Today, it was Bruno putting it to Martial. And it was interesting at the end, because there's no boos, and I think the fans are very much still behind Ollie and what he's trying to do. But I think this scratching of the head, I think we're in a position where if things don't pick up soon, it might start tipping the other way.
We've just got to give credit to Everton as well, Rebecca. Mm. No, they could have won the game. Right, yeah. Injury, ravaged side, well-organised, great spirit, and they could have won it later.
Without Richarlison and without Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah.
Andros Townsend scored at Old Trafford last season for Crystal Palace and did it again today for Everton. He's given himself a whole new lease of life as a Toffee. We're going to hear from Bruno Fernandes in just a tick. But first, here is the man, Andros Townsend.
That must feel like more than a point, doesn't it, Andros?
Yes and no. Going into the game with the injuries we had, we probably would have accepted a point, but when you go to Old Trafford, create the chances we had the chance that was offside in the last few minutes. Mm. Yes, we're delighted, but on another day, it could have been 3 points.
Where did you get that goal celebration from, right?
You know what? Listen, no, this guy is my idol. I grew up watching Cristiano Ronaldo, spent hours on the training pitch trying to execute his techniques. Maybe should have spent a bit longer on the celebration because it wasn't great execution, but no, it was a bit of respect to Cristiano, and it's an honour to be on the same field as him.
Talk us through that goal then.
Oh, it was amazing. Dimi doing what Dimi does best, on the counter-attack, using his pace and power. And then as soon as Duke's got it, I know with the quality he has and the vision he's had all season, I knew if I kept up with him, he would put it in my path. And thankfully, on this occasion, I managed to keep my composure and put it in the bottom corner.
You got the goal touch back. Is it five goals in nine matches at Everton?
You say back. I never had it. it's something that's obviously, I've said it many times before, is it's been tough for me trying to analyse why I haven't been scoring on a consistent basis with the quality I have with both feet. But I'm working on the training field. The manager, he demands the very best, and he got the best out of me when I was at Newcastle. Seems to be getting the best out of me again at the minute. And if I keep working hard, keep listening to the manager, hopefully I can continue getting on the score sheet.
Yeah, he's doing a great job. What is he telling you to do? What's different?
It's just non-stop. It's just he always wants to improve. If I score in the top corner, he tells me I need to put it bottom corner. If I cross out wide, he tells me I need to come in the pockets. He never gives you a pat on the back. He always wants more because he knows the quality we have in the dressing room, and he always thinks there's a higher ceiling to reach. And I love that sort of technique, and I'm repaying his faith at the minute. And like I said, long may continue.
Bruno, does that feel like a big missed opportunity today?
Of course, I think. Having the result on our side, and once again made the mistake to slow the game, make it slower, make it easy for them. Don't try to attack again. Don't try to go forward. I think we should learn from the past, but we still have a lot to learn as we have seen today. But we have to carry on now and look for the next games and watch what we did wrong today, and we have to solve that problems.
Was one of the things you did wrong today to have everybody pretty much up for the corner for that breakaway goal? It seemed that there was a big risk there.
No, just was it the same position as always we do. Bad corner from me. After we could clear the... Clear the ball, we didn't clear, and after we could make a fall, we didn't make it. They come through us and they score. That's it. Nothing very, very special from them. Just a good counter, but we should do it. Should do much better starting on my corner, and until the end of the goal.
Well, it finished a point apiece, but you wouldn't know it from the two demeanours of Andros Townsend and Bruno Fernandes. And just going back to Everton for a second, it was a bit of a false dawn last season. They started really well under Carlo Ancelotti, then faded away.
Yeah.
How much confident should Everton fans be that this time it's going to be different? This season it's going to be their season?
Well, they've got a safe pair of hands, and if they want confirmation of that, have a look at the table right now. They're sitting third, same points as Manchester United after seven games. And I remember this game. They played a game pre-season, these two teams, and Manchester United beat them 4-0. And it was a time when Everton hadn't particularly started pre-season well. There was all the talk about Rafa not being a fit, and there was a real worry that this could go wrong pretty quickly. In fairness, his team are organised with Beckett. They're well set up. They can break on the counter. Demarai Gray, $2 million, looks a better player than Jadon Sancho at $100 million. That's the work. Andros Townsend's revitalised from the player we saw at Crystal Palace. That's the work that Rafa does. That's what can be done on a training ground if you work with a group of players.
And players like Demarai Gray, players like Andros Townsend, have something to prove, don't they?
They really do. And the expectation levels are going to be lower. I think they're at a club now where they're totally enjoying the discipline of the manager to put them in a good position to be successful at what they're doing. And they're more stable. You know, the same question, like I'll give my take on it, is like, they've got a manager that's consistent, that's reliable, that's steady. This might not be their season, as you said, but in the future, they could have some big seasons with this manager, with some money, with new additions. Everton are as Rob says, they are in a safe pair of hands right now.
OK, it's all going in the right direction if you're an Everton fan as of now.
Thomas, so much to talk about from the game, but from your point of view, a deserved victory?
Yes, absolutely a deserved victory. We played a good match of football. It was an entertaining match of football because Southampton played also strong, but we did everything today, in my opinion, to deserve the win. And we got late goals, could have scored earlier, we could have finished the game in first half, but it's like this, and we deserve to win.
How frustrated were you that it's only 1-0 at half time when you've dominated that half?
Actually, I was not frustrated with the 1-0, but if you score a second one and they take it away from you for almost no reason, then you are frustrated. And was necessary for me and for my team to get the frustration off our shoulders and to refocus in second half. They switched the system to a back five, so it's more difficult to find spaces and to adapt to it. So this was the challenge. You know, if you have a lot of chances, you don't score the second one. Okay, with one mistake, they punished us and we gave away a poor penalty. But the reaction to the equaliser and the reaction to the red card was excellent.
So Cesar Azpilicueta's challenge for you, that's not a foul?
Absolutely. No. I mean, we have talks here before the season. Everybody tells me that we want to... Everybody tells me we go back to English football and we will not whistle soft touches. And it depends how the game goes. And then we're here in the middle of London. It's raining. It's some 40 minutes and we have an intensive match. and then it's not even after the situation that there is a goal. There's a chance, there's a second chance, there's a third cross, and the third cross is a goal, and we go back. This is not the decisive action for this goal. So, no, for this situation, I have absolutely zero understanding why we go back to this situation and take a goal away.
But Timo did get his goal, yeah. And it was an incredible feeling of relief, wasn't it, around the stadium?
Yeah, of course. It was 1-1, and we come from two defeats, and we played a good match of football, and it's difficult to create, also against 10 men defending. So, yeah, it was a fantastic goal, and he was there where he needs to be as a striker, and I'm happy, and happy for the team.
And Ross Barkley played a key part in that. You made a decision to bring him on for his first league minutes, okay. And he did what he had to do.
Yes, he did what he had to do. That's why he came on, to deliver, to have maybe one shot, one free kick, or one shot from open game, because we were like in the half spaces around the box. So I hope that he can maybe find a solution. He's very strong in the moment. He plays with a good energy in training and in the Champions League games where he came on. In the cup game, he was strong. So yeah, I'm happy for him. The pass was excellent, the delivery was excellent, and Timo finished it.
Just finally, you're top of the league going into the international break. That must feel very, very good.
Yeah, it's only Saturday. You know, there are some teams playing tomorrow who can still catch us, but it was, yeah, it's the best thing to go into national break with a win, and 16 points is very good. And from here on, we continue.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Obviously, Ralph, the red card to such a key player in your team is a crucial moment in the game. It seemed to me that it was a bad ball from their goalkeeper that invited James Ward-Prowse to go for it. He's a bit unlucky that he's caught the player, not the ball.
Yeah. When you press high, then you have sometimes situations like this. And when you're a little bit too late, this is a little bit about winning the ball, having a goal chance, being a little bit late, and then it's a foul. I haven't seen it, but I think they spoke about the red card from VAR, Mike Dean. I think he was the third time he gives us a red card as a VAR since I'm here. But okay, when it was one, then it was one. Okay, but I think we shouldn't only speak about the red card. I think we should speak about a fantastic game for the supporters today. I mean, we were absolutely brave today. We did a good job. I'm very proud from the way we played today. I think super intense first half, up and down, both teams with an open vizier. But in the end, it was the red card, the decisive moment. We were coming back, changed the shape in the halftime. You could feel that Chelsea had to play the highest level to score against us. And I think the chances before the red card haven't been that much. We defended proper, also in the other shape, always nasty with our counter attacks. What we don't have, I must say, is that we have not the quality in the final third then to make an equal 3-3 or 4-4 to have a goal chance. We can only score when we have an over number, and this is you don't get against this team normally. So this was difficult for us, but we scored a goal, we came back, and then finally lost the game. But I think, yeah, was really, I must say, the guys did a really good job against the Champions League winner. I mean, yeah, what can I say? I'm absolutely proud of the effort we put in today.
I saw you play Wolves last weekend. I've seen you today. I mean, it was a much better performance.
I don't know. It was a completely different game. Last week we had a lot of possession and we had to make the game. This game was more about playing against the ball and being good on the jump. And I think we forced them. We tried to make it as tough as possible for them. And I think it was tough for them.
You're recurring to this theme most weeks about talking about quality in the final third. It's a problem.
Yes, not when you have 100 million to buy Lukaku, then it's not a problem. But we are speaking about a different level, and this is not so surprising for me. But I must say that with the limits we have, we did a fantastic job today, to be honest.
Graham, how in the end did you see this result tonight?
It's what it is, the result, but the performance was fantastic from us. I loved our intensity, loved our courage, loved our quality. It was a wonderful, wonderful performance, and really proud of the players.
You go in at half-time having really controlled that first half. Are you delighted with everything you've seen, or are you thinking, why on earth have we nothing to show for it?
No, as a coach, you know that football, sometimes the hard bit is putting the ball in the net, but we did everything. We tried everything. Like I said, the intensity was great. Regaining the ball, playing out from the back, winning it back, going man for man with their, you know, high quality players. Players showed great courage and intelligence as well. So it was a fantastic performance.
We've spoken in the past, haven't we, about the fine margins in football. Is there a sense that this might have been a game you might have lost last season?
Maybe. And that's football. It can happen. It's sometimes you don't get what you deserve, and it's not fair, and that's life. But like I said, the performance was really, really good, and we can take a lot from that. We'll learn, we'll improve, but in terms of the 90 minutes, I can't be happy with the guys. They gave everything, and terrible evening in terms of weather, but both supporters I thought were fantastic, made it a good atmosphere, and it was a really good game.
Let's focus on your performance then, considering the quality of the opposition as well. What did that tell you about the progress that you're continuing to make at the moment?
Well, we've been playing well for a while. Our performances have been consistent, I think, and like I said, lots of the time last year we played well, but the points weren't what we wanted, so you're always having to answer questions around results, which is normal. But in terms of our performance, they've been quite consistent. I think that was a step up from us in terms of our performance today, which you needed against a team in a great moment after the result they had at the weekend. So we knew we had to step up, and we did. And it's one thing knowing it, and then the other thing executing it. I thought we did that really well.
One standout individual tonight, Mark Cucurella. What did you think of his contribution, and what have you felt about his contribution so far since joining the team?
His contribution's been brilliant. On and off the pitch, great lad, everybody loves him, settled in really well, great positive mentality, and then the way he plays the game is so refreshing, gives energy to the team. But again, I thought the whole team performance was amazing. The back three were defending big spaces against some really, really good attacking players, did it with real courage. So I don't want to signal anybody out, but team-wise was just fantastic, but Mark, we're really happy with him.
The bottom line is you go into the October international break with 14 points from 7 matches. What's your overall assessment of that start?
Well, it's good. From a points perspective, you can't argue with that. It's 2 points a game in the Premier League. It's very well done from the guys. Like I said, we've had to be resilient. We've had to dig deep at times because we've had problems, injuries, etc., which everybody has, but we've dealt with it well. Performances have been good, with it not being perfect. Today was as close to perfect as you can get, certainly first half. And we have to keep going from that.
Appreciate your time. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Mikel, you take a point in difficult conditions. What did you think of Arsenal's performance tonight?
Well, I think we have to take the point because I don't think we deserve anything more than that. And if we got that point, it's because we defended really well the last 15 or 20 metres of the pitch. But otherwise, I think it's a performance where we need to improve a lot in the rest of the departments.
What did you feel was missing tonight, particularly off the back of that performance against Tottenham?
We struggled to interpret well their press, how we could beat that man-to-man press that they proposed right from the beginning. We lost a lot of duels every time we had the ball and tried the opportunity to connect with somebody else, to set the ball, to run off that person and then attack open spaces. We didn't do it well. And then the game becomes with big transition moments, with equal numbers in your back line and completely to control. So we never took the game that we wanted to take. And there we weren't comfortable.
You saw how well they controlled much of the first half. How did you try and address that at half-time?
Well, we make some adjustments, obviously, and we improved. I think in the second half we looked different. The substitutions helped at the end as well to give us a different edge with what they were trying to do. And we had some big situations. Probably the clearest chance of the game with the header that they had was for Emil. But we weren't concrete enough in the opponent's final thirds.
What difference did you feel the likes of Pepe and Lacazette coming on could make at that point?
Well, Laka, because of his qualities and the way they split and they follow everybody in midfield, his link-up play is probably the best that we have in this situation. And then the pace, obviously, and the goal threat that Pepe gives you every time you are in open spaces.
You go into this second international break now with 10 points. You went into the first one with no points. How do you assess this last spell of games
overall?
I think
it's been a really positive block of results, performances. It's a lot of positives that we can take. We conceded one goal in five games, counting as well the Capital One Cup. And other things that we have to get better. The consistency as well with the ball, the way we want to play, we need to get better.
We've just heard from your goalkeeper, Aaron Ramsdale, another clean sheet for him. Mm-hmm. He's pleased with that. He's pleased to be back in the England squad. How pleased are you being with him?
I'm really pleased. I think he's been terrific. We are defending really well as a unit. Aaron has been terrific since he started to play. He needs to continue to do that. Now he needs to focus with the national team and come back healthy.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Welcome inside our studio this Sunday morning. Robbie L, Robbie Musto, Rebecca Lowe. We have the first firing of the season. We found out, just probably when you did as well, about 10 minutes before we came on air. Quite a surprise, I think it's fair to say. I'm just going to set the scene for you, just put everybody in the picture of where Watford are and how they've done so far this season. So I said they're 14th, they've played seven, they've lost four, they've drawn one, and they've already managed to win two games against Norwich and against Aston Villa. But even so, this morning, the statement was they are on a negative trend just when the club feel they should be visibly improving. Now, he took the job, and by the way, when Munoz was hired, the 13th different permanent manager since 2012. That's 13 managers in about 9 years. Joined last December, got them promoted, of course, had a really, really good season. Up they come, sitting 14th. Decent record so far. Fired this morning. Robbie Musto, reaction, please.
I'm almost laughing because I think it has to be the most ridiculous firing that we've covered doing this league in the, 8 years now we've been doing it? I mean, the data in fact says that's a pretty good start. By the way, they've won two games. They've scored more goals than Arsenal and Spurs. They're 14th in the league table right now. Whilst, by the way, this guy is trying to integrate 12 new summer signings, that's not always easy to bring into a side. So the fact that he's indicating a negative, strong negative performance is laughable, quite honestly. And when I think about it a little more, this was always going to happen. This smacks of, we'll reward this guy. We'll reward him for a really good championship season. Yep, you can be in charge in the Premier League, but we really want a Premier League manager. You're not. And you know, he's inexperienced, to be fair. I think 4 months coaching in Tbilisi, Georgia, before he got the Watford
job.
And
make a change in the summer, Rob. Don't wait till now. Just if it feels all right.
And it's some reward, isn't it?
Yeah, thanks for the reward.
So that's, I mean, and they've like, as soon as we get a reasonable like a draw and a loss to get rid of him to bring somebody else in, I think it's awful.
This football club, Rebecca, is a joke. The statement's ridiculous, the wording in the statement, the negative trend. And I think the only thing we're not surprised about, because it's Watford and the amount of managers you've said, the only thing that tops this for Watford is tomorrow morning they announce Ted Lasso as their new manager. I mean, honestly, that's where we are. This football club, this guy had the best defensive record in the Championship. He's trying to change a team from a rigid 4-4-2 that relied basically on Troy Deeney's power and strength to be a little bit more football. I was doing the game yesterday. I did a little bit of research before the Leeds game. They've got a nice mix of Saw. They've got Dennis. They've got King and Sissoko and players. I'm looking at them yesterday thinking they could be competitive this time around Watford. Yet again, we're back in the same place. They sack a manager. There'll be a time of integration. There'll be players in and out. Before you know it, we're Christmas and anything could happen. I mean, you have no sympathy for the way this football club does its business.
I mean, the results are saying that they actually are competitive right now. So that's exactly what
they're on a point
say.
To gate. A point a game. 38 points will keep you in this Premier League.
Certainly will. Now, down the years, Robbie, you have at times been OK with the way this club is run in terms of it's different. They like a director of football. They then just get the coach in to then coach the players that everybody else buys.
Right.
But for you, this is just a step too far.
And I think we saw it before their time in the Premier League, before where the managers were coming and going real quick. Again, for the most part, it's worked for Watford. They've been in the Premier League, but I think the last few seasons have been a disaster. There's talk about Claudio Ranieri maybe being the guy, possibly. I'll tell you what, it'll be his biggest achievement in his career if he stays a season with Watford, let alone winning the Premier League with Leicester City. It will be, if he stays to the end of the season. And I doubt very much it's going to happen if he takes the job.
Well, the thing that Watford know is they're one of only 20 clubs in the Premier League, and there'd be lots of people who would take this job. And Eddie Howe, for argument's sake, would be somebody who maybe would look at it and think, well, look at all the other managers. They take the job if it comes, Rebecca.
Just when you think the Premier League's enjoying a nice, calm little spell, we get our first firing of the season. Let's get more reaction. Pitchside today at Anfield, of course, ahead of the game between Liverpool and Man City a little bit later at 11:30 Eastern. Our team, Lee Dixon, Graham Lasso, Ollo White.
Rebecca, chaps and America, good morning to you from sunny Anfield.
At the moment.
Lee might be regretting the scarf choice right now, but he's playing the long game. Exactly. It was pouring with rain. It's going to be that sort of day. But what a game we've got to look forward to. Liverpool against Manchester City. The place will be rocking later on. But let's concentrate on Watford. And you've heard the chaps and their reaction to the firing of Cisco Munoz. Look, Watford do this. This is their identity. And they're rarely in trouble. If they're not in the Premier League, they're doing OK in the Championship. The track record suggests it works. So is it as shocking as the lads were saying?
Well, it's not in some ways. Obviously, the record of 7 points from seven games is enough at this stage to keep them in the league. But to lose to Leeds yesterday, who haven't... It's their first win. To draw with Newcastle, who are having a shocking time as well. And they lost to Stoke in the EFL Cup as well. There's three bad results there. And it seems to me that this was on the cards. This has been on the cards. It's part of the plan. We shouldn't be surprised in that sense. They're already looking for the next coach whilst they've got someone in the job, because it is a series of short-term sort of shocks that they give this squad to try and be a catalyst for success. And what success is to them is clearly getting enough quality in terms of players, but also a manager now, if it is Ranieri or someone of that calibre, who's got a track record in the Premier League. And that's a slight change for them, because they've often gone for managers that are quite unknown quantities and use them as part of a rotational process to try and give them that uplift. But it's, you know, of course, you've got to look at it and think it's disappointing, but not that surprising in many ways.
Well, it's not a shock. Let's get that out of the way to begin with. I think if you ask the supporters, in the last 10 years, they've been in the Premier League 6 years. They've had a promotion, they've had a relegation, they've had an FA Cup final. They haven't done, from an excitement point of view, from an up-and-down point of view, from winning games in the Championship point of view, to being in the Premier League more times than they haven't in the last 10 years, you'd have to say it's been a success. That's what they do. Is it a surprise now? Well, maybe the owners have said, you know what, this is what we do. When they don't hit those ceilings, we sack the manager. This year they might have said, you know what, let's push that bar a little bit more. So now they've got 7 points in seven games. That's not enough for them, so they sack the manager. So I think that obviously from a humanity point of view, and looking at the manager and going, he's done a pretty good job and he's still out of a job. Every manager who takes that job or that position knows what's coming. They know if they don't hit above for what the owners think, the likelihood is of getting sacked. So I don't think it is a surprise. I think the fans ultimately quite like the fact that they've been in the Premier League that long and had some relative success from that point of view. So, I'm not as shocked as as Robbie Musto is in the studio. I think it's kind of like that's their model.
Yeah.
Just get on with it.
Graham, six teams below Watford at the moment. Four haven't won a game yet. What do you think Norwich, Newcastle, Burnley and Southampton are basing their thinking on in terms of managers?
Well, it's a totally different approach. They've all got a different approach, with maybe the exception of Newcastle, that are chaotic at the moment. That's not by design. That's just the way the club is structured, and all the way down, from the ownership down to the fans, that adversarial sort of type relationship they have at the moment. So I think Steve Bruce is probably the one that's looking around going, OK, how can I get some control of this? I think the others, you know, you've got Sean Dyche. He's, you know, job for life. In some ways. Leeds with Bielsa, it's a totally different attitude that he has and the club have towards him and football. And Norwich, long-term plan. You know, they kept Farker when they got relegated. He's come back up, had a terrible start to the season. But you can see there's a different strategy to those clubs that they believe is going to give them longer-term stability.
Keep your eye on Southampton, Rebecca, as well. The sun's gone in, it's got a bit chilly. I hate to admit it, I think Lee's right.
Manchester City are the subject of Sunday's Boot Room. We're going to get a transatlantic point of view from Arlo Lee and Graham shortly. But Robbie Musso, I'm going to start with you. This false number nine situation, which is causing a huge debate among City fans and actually in and around the Premier League. Is the problem with Man City a lack of striker, or is the problem a lack of continuity in who he chooses to play the false number nine, because he has chosen Grealish, Torres,
Foden, the list goes on. Sterling, of course, most recently. De Bruyne, even. Yeah. For you, what is the bigger problem?
Well, first of all, it's not been a massive problem because they won the Premier League title last season. But obviously, a concern of the football club that they tried to buy Harry Kane. So it's not just us or me saying that they could be better with a natural leader, a front man. The club tried to do that. Now, I just, you know, at times, of course, when they first started to do it was different. And they still create a lot of scoring opportunities. And last year, the midfield players scored a lot of goals. Ilkay Gundogan was a top goal scorer, 13 Premier League goals. So in order to achieve what they did last year, he's got to do that again. Or somebody else has got to step up for the goals. 83 goals were scored by Man City last season, which is the fewest to win the title since Leicester did it, I think, 4 or 5 years before that. So I think when we look around the league and the other teams, they've improved. And I feel like 83 goals potentially isn't going to be enough. So Man City would have to find more goals when you think of Liverpool now, the way that they're playing, and a few others in Chelsea, etc. So that's what concerns me, and I've watched a couple of recent games, and the results haven't been terrible. But it just looks like it lacks a natural striker, a leader, a front man to be that guy that gets in the right spots at the right time to score goals. And Pep also said it, I think, in his press conference after the game last weekend, or leading into this one, where he said, "We just haven't got that guy, and we're trying to do the best that we can. I'm trying to get as many players into the box as we can to get the goals required."
OK, so if they need more goals, surely they need somebody who knows that every week he's playing in the false number nine position, he can get a hold of that position, he can learn it a bit better, rather than chopping and changing.
True, but I'm going to try and play devil's advocate to Musty's argument and to the argument that you put out there. First of all, this is Pep's world, and Pep does it in a different way. We've seen inverted full-backs, we've seen goalkeepers as centre-backs, we've seen him win a title without a striker, so it can be done. I agree that obviously if you get a Harry Kane, he's fine. But there's also, with Pep, there's a profile of that person who's going to play in the false nine. More than anything, you've got to keep possession of the ball. You've got to have good spatial awareness, get between the defenders. So we've seen Foden play there. We've seen De Bruyne play there. We've seen Torres play there. Now, the other thing I would throw at you, Bex, and I was thinking about this last night when we were thinking about City. If you're Liverpool, who's going to play the false nine? Who is Van Dijk and Matip going to pick up? You don't know, which is part of the problem that Manchester City give you. If it's Harry Kane or if it was a Sergio Aguero, and I know I'm going to practice Sergio Aguero, Liverpool have practiced this week and don't actually know who's that guy who's going to be central and probably don't know who the white guy is. So I sometimes think Pep looks at the opposition, he looks at the game, he looks at maybe minutes played. And the one thing I'll say about Manchester City is, even when they get beat, they generally have more football than the opposition and generally create more chances than the opposition. What they aren't doing at the moment is converting them.
The only thing I'd say about that, Rob, in terms of carrying on this conversation is it helping the development of Raheem Sterling to play sometimes wide, to sometimes play as a nine? Same with Phil Foden, sometimes up front. Is it helping their game? Where Jack Grealish is coming now, playing on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
I just think, is there an element to this as well where it kind of suits a player to really get familiar with the position and possibly the players around him, and you keep rotating the player in different spots? Again,
it's an interesting point. I'd also, again, I go to Pep's world. And Pep's world, I think, you have to be an all-round footballer and play in a number of positions and play wherever the positions take you. I just think that he's worked it out. He continues to go that way. And I still think Manchester City will believe they can still win a title without a recognised number nine.
Well, they did it last season. They could well do it again. The proof will be in the pudding. Let's take you back to Anfield ahead of this game then for more On the Boot Room. Arlo Lee and Graham.
Thanks, Rebecca. I guess in a way we're at the home of a team that won a Champions League and a Premier League essentially with a false nine, although he has number nine on his back, Roberto Firmino. Whether it's him today or Diogo Jota, we'll have to wait and see. Lee, Jurgen Klopp says in terms of playing a false nine and maybe a lack of goals in a number nine, it's a luxury problem. And he said, to Robbie Earle's point, it'd be easier if they had a number nine to mark, which they don't have. Where do you stand on the whole false nine
debate? A little bit, Rob, what Robbie Earle said about Pep's world and all that. Like, I think it'd be wrong to suggest that he's just making this up as he goes along. The fact that they went for Harry Kane would suggest that he wanted to fill a number nine position. I don't think that was any secret. The fact they didn't get that, his shopping list was short. It was him. Haaland not available or not suitable or whatever the reason was at that time. So he didn't get Harry Kane. So he changed the way he plays or continued the way he played from last season. There's no doubt that City play differently when they play with that false nine. The wingers are a little bit narrower. They play a little bit more linked into that position. They swap positions with whoever's playing there. So I think, and they will do an awful lot of training work on that pitch in Manchester, week in, week out, when putting the different positions, different players in that position to learn the role. That's what he expects from his players. He expects the players to understand the game of football, not just about playing number nine, centre forward, scoring goals. They will create goals, there's no doubt about that. And I think that's the important thing to emphasise, is he wants his players to go into that position feeling normal and feeling it's not about being on a number nine, a centre forward. It's about being in a position to get the ball and create something, however that happens. And he will change when, if they did sign Harry Kane at Christmas time, they would again change the way they play. So welcome to Pep's world. If you're a footballer playing for him, get used to playing in all positions and being comfortable, because that's what he does.
Yeah, Kevin De Bruyne, Kyle Walker, Raheem Sterling all saying that it's a brain exercise with Pep Brot working for him. There's a new challenge.
We would
definitely struggle.
Well,
you mastered the false fullback position, so
now we're doing the false broadcast position. Lee's absolutely right. The way that the principles of Pep Guardiola, the Barcelona principles where he honed his sort of coaching talents, are all about keeping possession, moving your opponents out of possession, and then filling that hole with one of your players. So it's about pulling people out of positions. If we're talking about the centre forward and the centre backs, if you can get the centre back out of that line and get someone in behind, coming in, as you say, off that narrow wing position or from midfield, Gundogan did it a lot. He's a big miss for them, I think, at the moment. There's no better team, I don't think, at doing that than Manchester City. It doesn't matter about their personnel in that sense. It's much more about freeing up spaces in front of the into the penalty area that then create chances. The problem they've got at the moment, I think, is they're not hitting the target. They're seventh in the shots on target with 31 to Liverpool's 49 on target. They're having lots of shots, 115 shots, but they're not finishing those chances off necessarily at the moment.
No, but it's also it's a long season, and it's about keeping the ball out of one end and putting it in the other. They scored 12 goals, they let one goal in. So they play a different way when they play with the nine. So that's what they've got to do. If I was a midfield player or a Foden or somebody like that or a Sterling, and Pep said you're playing a false, my eyes would light up, because your responsibilities are completely different. You haven't got to go up against anybody. You're not being marked by a fullback if you're playing on the wing. You've got that free role of wandering into any space you want to do, and everybody's looking for you because they all link to the number nine or the false nine.
Sorry, Graham. They've scored, we say, it's turning into feast or famine. They've scored six twice. Okay, once against Wickham in the EFL Cup. They've scored five twice. They've also been shut out three times, most lately at PSG in the week. But they outshot PSG 18-6.
Yeah, so the sort of, again, it's all these principles, and it's to the extreme, isn't it? And actually, sometimes it's quite hard when you're commentating on them, because it's pattern after pattern after pattern. And it's how we break that down differently when essentially they're doing the same thing to get the result that they want. But it's fascinating to watch. It is successful for them, and they've got the quality of players to be able to adapt to any system, any shape, or any personnel that he puts out there.
They're playing with two number nines today.
Can you imagine? 4-4-2 for Pep today then, Rebecca, by the sounds of it. But they have had 14 different goal scorers in all competitions. It'll be fascinating to see what he does this afternoon.
Yeah, true. And there are pros and there are cons. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Fascinating stuff in this Sunday morning's Boot Room.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Focusing now on the 11:30 Eastern game between Liverpool and Manchester City. This is a total number of Premier League points won since the start of the 2017-18 season. So in the last 4 years, you can see just from this, they are far and away, head and shoulders, above all the other teams in the Premier League. City on 378, Liverpool a little behind them on 354. Well, on Friday, the captain of Liverpool, Jordan Henderson, did a Zoom with our very own Robbie Musto for Inside the Mind.
So Liverpool's injury issues, Jordan, of last season are well documented. Most are back fit now, and the group is looking pretty strong so far the first part of the season. How would you summarise how the squad looks at this moment?
I think it looks strong. You know, we've started the season really well. We've got great depth within the squad. The team's been rotated at times, but always looked strong, and performance level has been good. So that's important, because you're going to need everyone throughout the season with the number of games that we've got. So overall, it's been a positive start, but still a long way to go.
Mm. And yourself, you talk about injuries. You were one of the players that missed a big chunk towards the end of last season with a groin injury. How is it, and how are you, and does it bother you at all now?
No, I feel really good. I'm in good shape. You know, of course, I missed the end of the season and then sort of done well to get back for the Euros, but still wasn't sort of 100%. But, yeah, trained for like a pre-season after that on my own and then with the team. So I've had quite a long time of building back up and training. So it's nice to be back playing games and physically feeling good.
I'm sure it's nice as well, mate, to be playing games in midfield. And you and Fabinho, of course, have looked really good together. Give us a little insight into what it's like playing with Fabinho in that area and how your role kind of changes when you play with him.
Yeah, I love playing with Fab. You know, he's such a fantastic player, reads the game so well, breaks play up, good on the ball. And, yeah, to play with him is amazing, really, you know, especially when I'm playing in the eight, a little bit more advanced, you know, when you've got him behind you to protect and sort of stop counter-attacks and stuff. It gives me a little bit more licence to get forward, which I've been enjoying. But, yeah, incredible player and fantastic to play with.
Mm. And Anfield, mate, tell us what it's like with those fans back in the stadium and playing in front of them again this season.
Yeah, incredible. You know, it's amazing to have them back, of course, at Anfield, you know, but everywhere, really. Away games with the atmosphere and stuff has been much, much better. Totally different game without them, as we've seen over the past year or so. So, no, amazing to have all the fans back in the stadiums and makes such a big difference to the players and the way football's played, really.
Do you think it adds a focus to the players? Like, there's instant feedback now when you're playing. Like, I'm sure it's crazy with nobody in the stadium. Do you think it puts certain players under a bit more pressure, or does it sharpen up your game a little bit with the fans being in there?
I think it just adds a bit more of the emotional side in, you know, when you sort of you can hear the crowd reacting to certain things. And, yeah, of course, it'll apply more pressure at times to players. So that's all part and parcel of football, you know, that's what we grew up with. So to not have that was a different experience, and it wasn't the same, of course. So like I said, to have them back, it's been amazing.
Mm. Just thinking about yourself, Jordan, with your career there, I think 10 years now at the football club. Do you feel like, when you look back at the beginning of your career at Liverpool, did you ever think it would go on this long? And I guess more importantly, if you had to adapt your game to remain a really important part of the team over that period of time?
To be honest, when I first came, you never really think about how long you're going to be there. You just sort of know that you're coming to a huge football club and you want to give absolutely everything to be successful there. And that's all I continue to do. No one ever knows how long something's going to last. Of course, one day it's going to stop, but hopefully that won't be for a very long time. But you just never know in football, you know, it changes so quickly. So for me, I just enjoy playing for this club every single day in training, every game, and try and give me absolute everything to be better, to try and help the team become successful. And yeah, that's all I've ever tried to do. And that to answer to your second question in terms of have I adapted my game, I think I've learned and improved my game over the number of years that I've been here. Especially under Jurgen, who, you know, I probably would, at the beginning of playing more of a six and a deeper midfielder, I'd never really done before. I feel as though since I started playing there a few years ago, you know, it was difficult at the beginning, but I learned, improved, and I think I can play that position well now. But also, I can still play my natural position, which is an eight, getting up and down, box to box, a bit more of all action as well, which I enjoy. So I would say I have adapted and I have learnt different ways in how I play, but that's part and parcel of of being a footballer. You always learn, you always want to improve and be better and be able to adapt in different positions wherever the team need us, really. And there was times last year I had to play centre-half, which I didn't particularly enjoy, but sometimes you've got to just do it for the team and what's needed, and I'll always do that. So, yeah, I think there's part of us that has adapted, and I think that's essential in modern-day football. But at the same time, there's still attributes there that I've had my whole career as a player, really.
Yeah, interesting. Last one, mate. Just in terms of talking about change and adapting, do you think Jurgen Klopp, we're almost at 6 years now at the football club, can you give us, like, a thought of whether you think he's changed? Has the club changed him? How different is he now than what he was at the start of his reign at Liverpool?
I think the gaffer will always try and improve as well and be better and look at different ways tactically and how he can improve his squad, how he can improve the players that he has and how to be successful. So, of course, I think he'll always continue to progress and want to improve as a manager, and he's done that since he first came to the club. You know, what he's achieved here and what he's done for this football club is incredible, and like I say, hopefully there's even more to come in the near future.
Lovely stuff there, hosted by Robbie Musto with Jordan Henderson. Robbie, what's so interesting, and of course what he didn't mention there, was when he first arrived and you asked him about it 10 years ago, he probably didn't think he'd be there 10 years because, my goodness, he was on the end of some real criticism when he first arrived. He signed with Stuart Downing from Sunderland and they were in a difficult time, Liverpool, and it was a hard time mentally. How much do you think he's had to grow to get out of that mindset all those years ago?
A lot. And that's why I wanted to ask him about his adaptability, because I think it's a crucial part of a professional player. Certainly was for me in my career. To stay where I wanted to be, I had to adapt. So it's interesting the way that he did that. But you're absolutely right. You know, you'd think, has he got enough kind of about him at that point to be a Liverpool player and now a Liverpool legend, almost, really, what he's done, and a very important part of the squad now. So I think, yeah, I think he knows that he's done well with the tools that he was given, but it's all credit to him, you know, to be able to do that and the drive to make those improvements.
Tells you all about the man. Let's remember, going back in the day, Sir Alex Ferguson said about this lad, he's got a funny running gait, I'm not sure he's going to be a top player. And even the great ones get it wrong, because he took the captain's armband from Steven Gerrard and has landed the thing that Liverpool have wanted forever, that title after 30 years. So, huge credit to him. And the way he's playing in the new focus, he's key for Liverpool at the moment.
Certainly is. We will get the team news ahead of that game a little bit later on. Goodness me. As Arlo said at the end, take a breath. Smiles on our faces. It was goalless at half-time. Fair result, 2-2?
Yeah, probably fair result. Just a brilliant game of football, brilliant managers, brilliant players and brilliant goals. I mean, add everything. There's controversy with some of the decisions, managers making tough calls, brave calls that worked. Jurgen Klopp stopped it at source, really, stopped Man City's dominance in the second half with just more effort and more energy from his players. And some of the moments of quality, Rob, that we saw in that game, take your breath away. Yeah. It was that good and that high a quality of match.
I want to have a look at the Salah goal in just a second, but first of all, your initial reaction, Rob.
Sometimes we call this work, but it's a privilege, Rebecca, to watch that. The speed of play, the intensity, the skill levels, the drama. We played in a league that was called the Premier League back then. It was about 50% of the speed of what we're seeing now. You can't sometimes imagine how people are closing down, how touches, how, you know, the Salah goal we'll talk about is brilliant. And Liverpool's, I thought, will and attacking drive dented City's possession. And that was what Liverpool were about. And you saw two different teams, saw two managers hugging at the end, almost like a bit of an appreciation of each other. And the big four are in the top four spots now. We have got a serious title race this year.
So just how difficult was that goal from Mo Salah? Let's take another look at it, shall we?
It's a work of art. It's a work of art. I mean, the skill level, the quick feet level, the move in his body, and this little bit of skill, and getting to this ball, look at this, every sinew he strains to get to that. Shouldn't be allowed. It's an incredible goal. I mean, that had us on our feet here. Just a stunning bit of football from an incredible footballer.
Is he the best player in the Premier League right now?
Yes. Someone among you is the best player in the world, Rebecca. I'll be part of that argument. And I'll tell you what else needs to happen soon. Liverpool need to get him signed up. I know he's got 18 months. I know there's got to be conversations. When he can do that, it changes games, it wins games, it wins title. And he's the best in the business at doing that. The hardest thing in the game, putting the ball in the back of the net.
Best player in the world right now, Mo Salah?
I'm just trying to think. I mean, who else out there is scoring as regularly as him, consistently as him, able to do that? I mean, I'm sure there are players that are able to do similar things, but I think so, yeah. Like Rob says with his contract, just give him the money. Give him the money. Get him to sign because he is an unbelievable player.
OK, well, in the first half, it was all about Phil Foden down the left causing problems. He got a goal in the end, didn't he? In the second half, it was him against James Milner. We saw that lovely shot at the end when they embraced and had a chat. Let's hear now from Manchester City's Phil Foden.
Phil, what a game. Do you have to get your breath after that?
Yeah, you know, it's very difficult to come here with the fans. You know, it's one of the most difficult grounds to come to. And, yeah, I thought we dealt with it really well today.
What was the game like in terms of the way it seesawed? Who had the ascendancy? Who scored first? You came back twice.
Yeah, man, you know, I had it all. It was end-to-end at times. Yeah, it was such a brilliant game. And, yeah, we're stuck in there to the end. And, yeah, we're happy to get a draw. And another day we could have took the 3 points.
Were you disappointed not to go at half-time ahead, given the amount of chances you had?
Yeah, especially me. You know, I had a couple of chances myself. Kev had a header, back post. Yeah, it was quite disappointing not to go in at half-time ahead. But, you know, we kept the momentum when we came out for the second half. And yeah, we digged in there.
You felt you should have had a foul or possibly a penalty in the first half. But was there even a stronger feeling amongst the City players that James Milner perhaps should have had a second card?
Yeah, you know, I'm an honest guy. I don't like to go down when I get fouled. You know, I try to stay on my feet and be honest. You know, I'd like to see the ref, you know, reward a free kick or whatever it was, a penalty for that. But yeah, whatever it is, you know, it happens and it's football, and I thought we dealt with it well.
What does it say about City, though, coming back twice from behind today?
Yeah, it shows our character, you know. We've not won here a lot. And yeah, we showed our character when we went behind, just carried on playing our football. We didn't look bothered. And yeah, we played really well today.
Tell us about the goal. Did it need unerring accuracy? There was only a small gap for you.
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of room to put it across goal. But yeah, I thought I'd just put my laces through it and hope for the best. And yeah, I was happy to see it going back of the net.
Joining Arlo, Lee and Graham right now, pitch side, is Pep Guardiola.
Rebecca, thank you. Pep, thanks for joining us. What's it like watching yourself on the highlights on the big screen there after such a big game?
What a handsome man. What?
That's what we were saying on commentary as well, Pep.
Oh, yeah.
How, I mean, after a game like that, which you felt in control of in the first half and then maybe it got away with from you a little bit in the second, what's your overriding emotion at a 2-2 draw?
Well, first of all, the game, that's why the Premier League is the best league in the world. So, what a game, what atmosphere. Anfield is in a special place, we cannot deny it. So, we came back twice. We played incredible first half, especially the 50 to 45 minutes was, wow. I don't know, in Anfield can someone open and play with this especially personality. We spoke many times when we came here today again, so... Well, you don't have courage to play and you see it's scary for the environment here. You don't have chance. And the way Bernardo played, Roddy played, and Kyle Walker, everyone, central defenders, and everyone was really good. So, yeah, unfortunately, we could not win, but we didn't lose. It's not another step for this tough Premier League. But, yeah, very pleased for the week we played.
We spoke before the game, we spoke about your number nine and the rotation of the front three. Can you just explain a little bit about how you want players to move into space and what the reason for that is with the opponent?
No, we want Jack's ability in smaller spaces to have the ball, to control it, and we didn't find him much because the structure defensive from Liverpool is really good, so good, and it was not easy. And yeah, we could play for Ander or Gabriel, but Gabriel now I prefer to play inside than in the middle. So, you know, sometimes I take a decision, sometimes, you know, before, and I don't know, sometimes it's right, sometimes wrong, but in general, the team was excellent in all departments.
I thought, as you said, after 15 minutes, I thought you took complete control of the game. And then at half-time, you think you'd need to be 1-0 up. You go into the second half. In that second half, did you feel the change? Did you feel Liverpool starting to get back in?
Against these opponents, this for me, absolutely. I played many times against Jurgen teams, and especially this one is the best three teams in the world. Mm-hmm. So when you have these 45 minutes, you have to take advantage, yeah. Not just for one goal, for margin. Mm-hmm. And I said to the half-time, so forget about it, now you're going to suffer.
Yeah.
So momentum, Anfield momentum always is there. They score a goal, and after 5 minutes they are there, it looks like, oh, maybe we're losing 4-0 for the way they are cheered up. So it's always difficult. But it's not easy for a team like was like Paris, for example. Again, we were incredible, much, much better, and we lost 2-0. Yeah. So when we were 1-0, we were there. And after 1-1, we were there. And that means, guys, we're a great team. Yeah. So because the great teams, it looks in the bad moments. And when the way they lose, we lose in Paris as a great team. Yeah. And today we come back as a great team. And that is, for Man City, is, I'm very proud.
Well, what a week you've had. Chelsea away, Paris Saint-Germain away, Liverpool away. One win, one loss, one draw. How do you feel coming
the
out
way
of
we
that
played,
week?
The way we played was, wow, was so good. The way we played all three games was good. Mm. Unfortunately, in Paris, we could not take result. But, you know, Stamford Bridge and Anfield and don't lose is nice. But especially the way. The way. So the memories always remain. Titles are numbers, you know. But the memories are the way you came here. I will remember that. So, like last season, come here. Even the years when we came in, we lost for incredible action, for the momentum from Liverpool. Always we were with a huge personality, and that is the great teams have to show.
And do you think that that's really what you're looking for, is that pride of being able to dig in when things aren't going well, when you go a goal behind, to show that character? Is that what gives you the real feeling of how good this team is?
You know that when everything is going well, 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, everyone is Maradona. So the problem is when there are problems, and that is when we have to show it. And we are a team that last year's show many, many times, and that is still we're going to do it. The team were fantastic. We're fantastic.
Pep, you're as enthusiastic as ever, aren't you, about the Premier League, about being Manchester City manager?
I love it.
You see it, it just exudes in your body language.
Yeah, I love it. I like it. Yeah.
Good, good. We appreciate it as well.
Thank you, guys.
Pretty good at interviews and a very handsome man.
Yeah, that's for sure. My wife will still say the same.
Yeah.
Ciao, guys.
Pep, thanks very much. Rebecca, we'll send it back to you.
Brilliant stuff, Arlo. Thank you so much. It's so interesting, that body language and the words he used and the huge smile on his face. You think he just won the game 5-0. He's as happy with that draw because of the way they played, Robbie Musto, as had they won it 4-0.
It's so important to him. It's almost everything, the way that he sees his teams play. And that's by taking the ball and being brave and combining and linking and doing the things that he saw his team do, not just today but all week, the tough matches that they've had. It does make you think. We were talking about it a little bit earlier, Rob, where they're so silky now in their build-up play, maybe as good as we've seen it over the last few years. If they just had that striker, like Aguero a few years ago, to finish off some of these moves, then, wow.
Devil's advocate, though, you take as I think you said to me while we were watching the game, you take a striker in, you take a midfielder out, maybe
you
the build-up isn't as good.
Absolutely. And the thing that comes across there, Rebecca, is that he's manager of Manchester City. He's a head coach of Manchester City. But he's a fan of Manchester City. He sits there and he wants to enjoy the football. He wants to be entertained. And that's a big part of what he said. And also his teams have to have a little bit about them. They suffered in the second half, he said, and they came through. And he's right. They did suffer. They went goals behind and twice they found a way to come back into matches. So they're in great shape, I'll tell you. People have talked like, maybe not City's year this year. That's a draw against Chelsea. And a draw against Liverpool, a win against Chelsea and a draw against Liverpool. They're in pretty good shape.
In terms of being in good shape, Liverpool look good. Chelsea are top of the league. City as well. Who's the favourite right now? Not your favourite, the favourite.
The favourite right now? Tough. I'd say Liverpool, maybe.
Liverpool favourite, despite them being just second.
Yeah, well, it's so close. There's so many games to play. And of course, any of the three, I think, probably. I don't think we can see Man United winning the title. But
Manchester City, for me.
They still
dominate. If the way they can dominate again, if they can turn some of that bit of that domination into conversion of goals, they'll win it again.
Interesting, because top of the league are Chelsea right now by a point. Let's take you back to Anfield. The Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp is just walking up to Arlo White.
Rebecca, thank you very much indeed. Jurgen, we've spoken to you after many very, very good games here at Anfield against various opposition. Against Manchester City as well, when you two teams get together, the sparks fly. What are your emotions after a 2-2 draw?
Mixed. Mixed, because, unfortunately, or thank God, the game has two halves today, both. First half, obviously,
wow.
I would say it was a lesson of City, but the thing is, we it's not really a lesson because City did as good as we let them do, because we did pretty much everything wrong. We didn't play enough football. Number one mistake in a football game, always. And the way we defended was obviously wrong as well. So we didn't change anything in the second half, just to say. We just reminded the boys what we actually wanted to do. So, and that's then, and you could see immediately, and that's, I'm really happy about that, that you could see, obviously, even City is to defend, and even City is to hurt, even when it's really difficult. So, second half, I would have loved to win, to be honest. But because the game has two halves, I think it would have been too cheeky to be now really disappointed about only getting 1 point. It's fine. I'm really happy that we still showed, it's possible, and especially for us possible, and with that I'm fine. But the first half is...
There was a moment where the camera panned to you and you were screaming, be brave, be brave. And that, for me, was where the first half went a little bit wrong. I think passing into midfield stopped, didn't it? You started going longer, and then it was like all of a sudden the control went out.
We mix up our offensive game with long balls. Of course, you do that, but only playing long balls. We cannot play like other teams in the Premier League do against us, and have no pattern for it. So it's not that we are then around and stuff like this, like poop, oh again, and then we follow the ball. It's just not us. But we missed in the first half completely. It was the extra pass.
Yeah,
let's just pass the ball here. Under pressure, yeah, and we shot. We shot the ball long. Under pressure, yeah. Pass it back, go there, half space, all of a sudden we were there. Connected midfield three, all of a sudden we are there. So Fab drops, or Curtis drops, Fab in the centre, Hendo on a half, 10, whatever that is, pass the ball there, free. Because we can force them back as well in the last line. And how is that? That's what we did again. Second goal was maybe not a team goal, but it was just a world-class situation. But all the situations now, we were really in the game. Our second half was a game everybody expected probably from the beginning.
Yeah.
Even I did that. And the first half we will use to learn. Because even with all the experience you make over the years and all the things you go through over the years, that something like this can happen, I actually wouldn't have expected.
No.
Playing that little amount of football is like, wow.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? It's like you change in the dressing room, you come here, you go a night before in a hotel and you arrive here and don't play football. It makes really no sense.
But is that forced by the opposition?
A little bit, but you saw in the second half, not as much. So they are incredibly good in possession. But everything in football is to defend. Because a pitch has a specific size, length, width, all there. If it would be rocket science, I would be the wrong person. Honestly. So it's not. The things are all clear pretty much, but the way they do it is really good. But I'm really happy we did it in the second half really well, actually. Around the goals we conceded. Again, we could have won the game, obviously, in the second half, but it's really fine that it's a point.
Jürgen, there's some excellent performances out throughout the 90 minutes, and we can pick Salah's goal, we can pick Mane, we can do all that. Absolutely world-class. But somebody I'd like to pick out was James Milner, playing at right back. First half, got torn to pieces. Not necessarily all his own fault. He wasn't getting a lot of protection from Mo, to be fair.
Yeah.
But in the second half, he came out. Phil Foden didn't have a kick for the first 20 minutes of the second half. How pleased... I mean, you know you're going to get a performance like that from him. How pleased were you with his performance?
Oh, massively, massively. I couldn't... Milly is one of the guys in 5-6 years when we meet, we can talk about like old stories from old battles in the battlefield or whatever. That's how it is. And so we had these moments together. So if you don't want to play if you want to play fullback, you better don't start against City.
Yeah.
Because it's just a game where you, as a fullback, you are really constantly in situations. And you have to defend. You said it right.
Yeah.
And it was not Mo alone. We left him alone there. It's like you have to... How do you defend them? So they pass the ball to the outside. They want to go into dribbling or underlap from the eight. So you put under the eight from your own eight, go there, double the situation. In that moment, they pass the ball back. Cancelo, Walker, whatever. Yeah. That's where you need the winger then. You cannot, the triangle, you have to defend with the triangle on the wing. So that's the situation. But he did really well.
And
come on. We took him off I only saw in Pep's reaction, obviously, that he thought it's a second yellow.
Yeah.
I didn't see that, to be honest. I only saw something going down there, and it wasn't clear.
It was a second yellow.
It was a second yellow. Well, they checked yellow,
Just not.
Jürgen, thanks very much indeed. If you get any days off in this international break, enjoy them, and we'll see you later in the season.
Thank you very much.
Great
see
to take care, Jürgen.
Jordan, what a second half, first of all. What was that like to play in?
It was a good game, you know, overall. I think second half we played much better. Intense game, as we knew it would be. So, a little bit unlucky not to come away with the 3 points in the end. I think first half, obviously, we can be a bit better, but second half we came out and put in a good performance for 45 minutes.
Aside from the first quarter of an hour, did you really struggle to get a rhythm, maybe sat too deep first half?
Yeah, we weren't pressing in the right way. You know, we weren't on the front foot in the first half, we started okay, but then after the first 5-10 minutes, we couldn't get out of them as much as what we would have liked. But second half, we regrouped. Spoke about one or two things that we could improve on, and I felt as though we did that second half.
What about that second goal scored by Mo Salah? Just tell us about a fellow professional's view of that one.
Yeah, it was incredible. You know, he just felt as though he just kept beating players, and when he gets it on his right foot, you know that he's deadly in them positions. So, fantastic goal. Unfortunately, it wasn't the winner.
What is the overall feeling in the dressing room? We've just been listening to fans on both sides and everybody's going away sort of buzzing about what they've seen, reasonably happy. What's the feeling in your dressing room?
I think we'll be disappointed overall because I think we can be better in the first half in terms of performance. And then last 10 minutes, 2-1 up, I think we should see the game out, to be honest. So disappointing, but still positives to take. You know, City are a good team and it's always going to be a tough fixture. So... a little bit of disappointment overall.
So much to talk about from this game at Anfield, and you wanted to have another look at this moment here, Robbie Musto.
I just think there's defining moments in the game. This is a defining moment. This is 1-1. And this really should have been a second yellow card for James Milner. Now, of course, we don't want to see players get sent off. There's no attempt to play the ball. He's deliberately bringing down the player. Now, again, we've enjoyed a magnificent game of football. It's been superb. But... it's our job to pick out big moments. That's a big moment at 1-1. If City get, you know, an extra man there, I don't know what we see afterwards, but better chance of them to win. That's what I'm saying.
A good example, James Ward-Prowse getting sent off yesterday for Southampton. Chelsea go on and win the game 3-1.
Exactly.
That can happen. And even Jurgen Klopp, I think, tongue-in-cheek, was sort of saying he realised they got away with one there, Milner, with the second yellow, and actually took him off a couple of minutes after to just protect him.
What do you think would have happened had it gone down to 10 men against City? How hard would those final
stages have been? Probably won the game because they stretch it back. If there's one team in this league you don't want to have 10 men against, it's Manchester City, because they possess and keep the ball so well and move you all over the park. So, as Robbie said, it could have been, but it wasn't given. We are where we are, and it's a point of peace.
James Milner, they talked about it on commentary. He's an experienced pro. He's a real professional. None of that plays into it, does it, in a referee's mind?
It shouldn't do, Rebecca. I can't answer why that wasn't given. I can't imagine that because of the player, they're not going to give him a second yellow card. They shouldn't do that. You don't consider who it is when you make your calls. They got away with it.
Klopp's post-match interview there with Arlo, again, similarly to Pep Guardiola, body language, everything, super happy. It feels like, at the moment, these teams, Chelsea included, everything is kind of going according to plan.
It really is. And I think what you want as a manager is for your team to be playing to its true potential. And I think a lot of that was relief, because in the first half they really didn't, as Jurgen Klopp said there. But the second half, you know, I expected a change at right fullback. He stuck with that group and he said words at halftime that made them change the game, change momentum. And that's why he's a special manager, because I think a lot would have made some tactical changes to stop City's dominance rather than just pointing the finger and getting them revved up to go out there and be a bit more aggressive.
One of the things that I've taken away the last couple of weeks, Rebecca, is that the top teams and the top managers understand you have to suffer. Chelsea had it the first half at Spurs a couple of weeks ago. They suffered the first half, went through it and won the game. Today, that Jurgen Klopp has said that his team had to suffer and they come through. The big teams understand you're not going to dominate at all times. And when you suffer, you're hanging together, you have a plan of working out, and you come through the other side. That's why Liverpool, Manchester City and Chelsea are I think the three that will win it, Manchester United, I don't think can suffer in the same way and come out on top.
Now, we learned first thing this morning, about 10 minutes, actually, before we came on air, that Watford have fired their head coach, Cisco Munoz, after less than 10 months in charge. He was hired last December and helped lead the club to second place in the Championships and therefore promotion back to the Premier League. They lost 1-0 to Leeds yesterday and were in 14th position this morning when he was fired. They'd actually now sit in 15th place. They've got 7 points through seven matches. The Watford board said this: recent performances strongly indicate a negative trend at a time when team cohesion should be visibly improving. We should also say the reports throughout the day are linking Watford with Claudio Ranieri. Apparently they're in talks with a former Leicester and Chelsea manager, amongst others. Claudio Ranieri at Watford. Do you like it?
He'll like it. I'm not so sure, but I don't particularly like how Watford go around their business. And I know people say, well, this is the way they do it, but to give a manager who's got you promoted, who's got 7 points, who's working hard to try and get things right, to sack him and then bring in Ranieri, I'm really not bothered, to be honest, Rebecca. I've got to be honest. I'm not bothered, because that's how Watford get me to a point where, you know, the team do so well, they go in the Championship, they get up, and then there's no relevance to me after seven games you sack a guy. Either don't start with him or give him a chance at least to fail.
Yeah, not bothered. Robbie Earle, what do you think?
I understand where he's coming from. I mean, there's short-term managers and there's Watford short-term. I mean, Munoz from December did a great job. I guess they want a Premier League manager. There's no way you can sack him thinking, after seven games, they've won two of them, by the way, that we're looking, our performances look like we're going in a downward spiral. They want a Premier League experienced manager. Ranieri's the guy. Does he make Christmas? Probably doesn't. They're probably going to look for somebody else. I don't know where their expectations lie. Do they think they're going to be a top 10 team, Watford? Mm. We know how difficult it is to jump into the Premier League.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of new players gone there, but even so, I think this is ridiculous from a guy that's done a really good job. They're going in a different direction.
Let's talk about the top four as we cover some storylines here over the course of the weekend. Has this weekend for you, Robbie Musto, been the moment where you've thought it's not a four-horse race, it's a three-horse race because of what happened with Manchester United yesterday?
Probably, yeah. I was on that path anyway with Manchester United, the way that they don't look like they play as a team more than a team that's capable of good moments going forward. It confirmed there's good moments going back, they're capable of doing that as well. And I think that's kind of the issue there. Just a quick thought, a comparison. Frank Lampard at Chelsea last season. New players, new expectations. He's trying to mould the team. He's trying to figure out the balance of attacking, defending. We talked about it many times. They get caught on the counter-attack, tweaking, not getting it right. New manager comes in, experienced guy, boom. From day one, stopped all that issue. At Manchester United, are we a similar road, Rob, where he's done a good job to get them to this point, now with an experienced, really top coach to figure out how they play as a team? They attack together and they defend together. It feels a similar situation.
It's interesting because the teams that are getting results against Manchester United, if you think of Everton, you think of Villa, you think of West Ham in the League Cup, come with a strategy. Their managers have come with a strategy to beat Manchester United. It was interesting. I was thinking about the game last night and I thought, whether we're talking Manchester United. United had on the bench yesterday. Ronaldo didn't start. Pogba, Sancho, Lingard, Donny van der Beek. We don't know what's happening. Everton had Lewis Dobbin and Charlie Whittaker, two 18-year-olds, yet with a better team, probably could have won the game if Davies takes a shot instead of playing in Yerry Mina. Had the best player on the park, it cost them $2 million, Demarai Gray, and have a set-up and a strategy worked by Rafa that's giving them points and keeping them at the top end of the table. That's the difference.
It's an incredible comparison. And you say that you probably think now they're out the title, not out the title race, but maybe it's a three-horse race rather than four. But that's not OK, is it, from United's perspective, that already in October we're thinking that?
No, not when you finished second place last year. And I know the other teams have strengthened as well, but you've made some big signings there. And the Jadon Sancho call is a big call for $100 million to bring in a player that you really, really, really wanted. I didn't see too many others knocking the door down to bring him in. And it's early yet, and he's a young player, and I think he will come good. But at the moment, Ronaldo, outstanding. Varane, doing fine. But that's kind of it. The team hasn't upgraded as much as you might expect when you bring in those three players. Of course, apart from Ronaldo's incredible impact.
Let's move it on to Brentford. Story of the season so far, sitting in seventh position. Now, here's my question. Could opposition teams get used to them, find a way, start to work them out?
No, because they've got one more than one way of doing it at the back end. They played against Arsenal, played some lovely football through the midfield and built it up. Now and then they went long into the front two who can play. They've got a pair of strikers who can get down the sides and do the... So there's more options than what they've got. They've come in... They're almost this season's Leeds United. They're a must-watch. They make you smile when you do it. And today they go 1-1 in the London Stadium away to West Ham, and most promoted teams will be like, this is a good draw away from home. They go and win the game. Wisha comes on, gets the goal, they have the celebration. They've come to the Premier League and been a great addition. They've brought something to the Premier League.
Everyone's second team right now.
Surprise me. I maybe didn't respect them enough, talking about euphoria and the happiness of being in the Premier League will keep them going. They're better than that. Mm. Their football is better than that. The front two players are better than that. And the manager's better than that. And the little vibe they've got going with their small stadium, the little lap of appreciation at the end of every home game is really good.
Who are you more worried about right now? Newcastle United, who are second bottom, or Norwich City, who are bottom bottom?
Worried about in what respect?
Just all-round concerns.
I think Norwich City are not going to stay in the division.
So you're worried about them for going down?
Yeah, but I guess I'm worried about Newcastle in terms of a great football club that's on the downers right now. You know, it's very difficult for them, and a change of manager may be the way.
It's worrying because if they go down, Rebecca, I don't think all the big buyers are going to be in, certainly not at the same level. It's a gamble to come out of the Championship. There's a worry around this big football club. There's so much negativity. Steve Bruce isn't going to go. The ownership looks like they're not going to sack him. The fans aren't happy. And the other big thing is, Rebecca, they don't play very good football. Other teams, at least, are having to play. Newcastle are one of the worst teams to watch in the league.
People say he should resign, but if you were Steve Bruce, you wouldn't walk away from a payoff, would you?
Absolutely not. It's for the club to do what they need to do if they want to get rid of him and move on.
OK. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. That does it for this edition of the Premier League on NBC podcast. Be sure to check out other episodes where you'll get a collection of our most spirited in-studio debates, as well as exclusive on-site access. Plus, don't miss out on Premier League mornings, weekends at 7 a.m. Eastern on NBCSN and Peacock Premium. Bye for now.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.